So we're going to continue with our talks. Our next talk is by Melinda Yerka from the University of Wisconsin, and she's going to be talking about the role of gene flow in the spread of Kenopodium album resistant to herbicides.
Okay, thank you for that introduction. I guess I don't need to reread my slide, but just to reiterate, I am Melinda Yerka from the UW-Madison. So first, I'd like to introduce you to Kenopodium album, otherwise known as common lamb's quarters. It is one of the world's worst weeds. It's highly competitive in corn and soybean crop systems. On the left, you have young plants, and on the right, you have an inflorescence. And I just want to point out that this is one single flower on that inflorescence. Kenopodium album, common lamb's quarters, one of the reasons that it is one of the world's worst weeds is because it is variably sensitive to a number of herbicides, and that's kind of what I'm going to talk about today. So if you look at plant resistance to herbicides over time, on the x-axis you have starting in 1950. That's about the time when herbicides started to be widely used in agriculture. About 20, 25 years later, in 1970s, is when the first weeds were seen to have evolved resistance to herbicides. Now, this graph just represents all herbicides in general and the numbers of weeds that have become resistant over time. But if you look at the next graph, it's the same graph, just broken down by herbicide modes of action. So these are just some herbicide modes of action here. And this just shows you the number of resistant biotypes to each one. What I'd like to especially draw your attention to are the glycines. That includes glyphosate, which is the active ingredient in Roundup herbicide. It was first introduced by Monsanto, where's my mouse? Here we go, in the mid-1970s. It wasn't until 20 years later, in the mid-1990s, that the first plants, the first weeds, were seen to be resistant to glyphosate. And that trend has been increasing over time. Not surprisingly, because of my talk, common lamb's quarters is in fact one of these weeds. And this is a big problem because on this list, common lamb's quarters is again one of the world's worst weeds in terms of herbicide resistance. So considering that Roundup herbicide is the most common agricultural herbicide used in the world, and common lamb's quarters is present all over the world and causes big problems, you can see why this is an issue. So the question is, how exactly is herbicide resistance moving around? Allele movement in common lamb's quarters population is poorly understood. It's suspected to be primarily self-pollinating, but the literature is very poor on this point. That said, most herbicide resistant traits are nuclear dominant or incompletely dominant, which means that they would move via pollen. So understanding its pollination mechanism is very important to understanding how this trait of reduced sensitivity to herbicides might move. So the question of our research was, what is the rate of pollen-mediated gene flow for common lamb's quarters in a typical crop environment? Now, some of you might not be familiar with what a gene flow experiment is, so just to provide you some background, a gene flow experiment is one that estimates the distance that a trait will move from a donor population, in other words, pollen parents, to a recipient population, in other words, seed parents. And this is kind of the graph of the data that you would expect to see. On the x-axis, you'd have the distance from a donor population, and on the y-axis, you'd have the percent progeny at each of these distances for that trait. You need markers to be able to determine which progeny bear the trait and which don't. Popular techniques include molecular markers, such as SNPs, SSRs, AFLP. There can also be used phenotypic markers, for example, herbicide resistance. You would spray the progeny and whatever survives must bear the trait. You could also use morphology, perhaps a leaf shape would be distinguishing. What we were able to use actually is color. So on the left here, you have what a typical common lamb's quarters plant would look like. And you see that in the whorl of the plant and the leaves, the new leaves, you have kind of a white color. Kenopodium giganteum is a member of the Kenopodium album aggregate. You could consider it maybe a subspecies. And it bears this bright magenta phenotypic marker, which, when you cross between the two, produces a hybrid with an intermediately magenta coloration, which just makes this an excellent marker for gene flow experiments because you can not only identify clearly the parentals, but also the heterozygotes. So we wanted to use that in gene flow investigations. This is what our experiments look like in terms of field layout. In the center, we had a very dense planting of Chenopodium giganteum, which we were going to use as our pollen parent, the donor population. Around it in concentric circles at distances of 2, 3, 4, 6, 10, and 15 meters were locations for Chenopodium album, the typical white coloration plants. Now, we did two layers of analysis for this. The first was direction. The experiment was divided into the cardinal direction, so north, northeast, and so on. We were also looking at distance, so again, the 2, 3, and so on meter effect. We were expecting that cross-pollination would primarily occur in a particular distance, and we were also expecting that it would occur primarily in a particular direction based upon the prevailing winds. We used a randomized complete block design for testing the effect of direction. And the block in this case was the experiment. The treatment was the sector. Now this makes sense because in any one experiment you can only have, for example, one south sector. And again, the sectors were divided in the cardinal directions, north, northeast, and so on. To test the effect of distance, we again used an RCBD, but in this case the treatment effect was the distance and then the blocking effect was sector, or in other words, direction, because we were expecting differences in that. The treatment distances, as I've said, ranged from 2 to 15 meters. The number of plants total per experiment at a particular distance ranged from 16 to 96. The number of plants per sector ranged from 2 to 12. And the spacing of Chenopodium album plants throughout the experiment was about 2 meters in all cases. In total, this brought the number of seed parents per experiment to 272. With 34 in each sector. What I want to emphasize, and you'll see that in the next slide, that was an initial planting density. The total pollen parents were 24 per experiment, and there were 3 per sector, and they were planted much more closely together, only about a half meter apart. Now, this is what I was getting to when I talked about initial planting density. For this experiment, it was extremely important that the pollination synchrony be similar between the donor and the recipient populations. So we planted out 2 sets of Chenopodium album at each location, about a week to a week and a half apart. And this was so that when Chenopodium giganteum began to bloom, we could select one plant at this location that had the closest pollination synchrony. For data collection analysis, random inflorescences from seed parents were bagged and harvested. The seeds were maintained at about ambient temperatures for Wisconsin winter, minus 18 to 4C, for about 3 months. Seed germination and phenotypic characterization of the seedlings was done in the greenhouse. Now, this brought us to the very interesting question of how many progeny should we evaluate within each distance within sector? Because again, the population biology of this plant is very poorly understood. It's a weed, it's not researched much. The expected frequency of cross-pollination and its variance were estimated using methods from gene flow experiments in wheat. And the sample size for at least 90% power to detect was estimated in proc power of SAS. So all of this means that at a distance of 2 meters, we needed to analyze 22 progeny. At 3 meters, 37, at 4 meters, 110, and after about 6 meters and beyond, we were expecting the cross-pollination to kind of hit its bottom plateau. So that's why we only evaluated 434 plants, or progeny, I should say, at each of those distances. This specifically is what we were looking for. This is a Chenopodium album by Chenopodium giganteum F1 hybrid, and you can see this intermediate magenta coloration at a very young growth stage, which made it, again, just an excellent marker to use for these experiments. Now, for flowering synchrony, as I stated, it was very important that it occur closely between Chenopodium album and giganteum, and that's what we were able to achieve. This graph is complicated, but I'm going to go through it systematically. On the x-axis, you have ranging from early August to mid-September. On the top tile, you have Chenopodium album. On the bottom, Chenopodium giganteum. We graphed beginning pollen shed dates for each of the plants, maximum pollen shed, that means 50% of open flowers per plant, and an end of pollen shed, so no open flowers per plant. What I'd like to especially draw your attention to are the colored lines. So for Chenopodium album, maximum pollen shed occurred At the same time, you can see as these pink lines or magenta lines for Chenopodium giganteum in kind of mid to late August. Now, on the top graph, the reason why there's only these three lines total is because both experiments had quite a few plants and we were able to pool the data over both experiments. But for Chenopodium giganteum, with only 24 plants per experiment, the initiation and synchrony between experiments of Chenopodium giganteum differed a little bit, so we had to graph the experiment 1 and 2 separately. Now, for testing the direction and distance effects, for direction, cross-pollination, as determined by the percent of progeny bearing this marker, was greater in the southwest sector than in most other sectors. And it was greater also, intermediately so, in the west and south sectors, so these sections of the experiment. That ranged from about 2.1% total progeny bearing the marker in the southwest sector to less than 1% in other sectors. For the distance effect, as we expected, at 2 meters we had the highest amount of cross-pollination, and that was about 3% averaged across all directions. Using the south, southwest, and west directions associated with the greatest cross-pollination frequency, we were able to develop this function. So this is the log of distance, and this represents 2 meter distance, and this is a 15 meter distance. And you can see that cross-pollination ranged from about 8% to less than 1%, and it had a very high R-squared value. So to summarize, the time of flowering initiation differed between Chenopodium album and Chenopodium giganteum, but the time of peak flowering was similar, and that's exactly what we were looking for. Cross-pollination was greater in the southwest sector, about 2.1% of all progeny, than in most other sectors, and again, that's averaged across all distances. Cross-pollination occurred at distances of up to 15 meters, but at low levels, means less than 1% of progeny. So our conclusion is that although Chenopodium album is in fact largely selfed, cross-pollination likely does play an important role in increasing the frequency of the resistance alleles within Chenopodium album populations. And this is because this plant does not have its own native dispersal mechanism. Therefore, when a plant matures, the seed basically just kind of falls off the mother plant and stays there. So if a resistance trait is going to travel any longer distance, most likely that would be through pollen in an undisturbed location. And with that, I'd be happy to take questions. Yeah.
I'm curious, the direction was to the southwest, and yet the prevailing winds are from the west to the east. How would you
explain that? That's something we thought a lot about. And our only conclusion, I guess there's only two ways that you could really understand it. Firstly, it's possible that maybe most of the major storms that were associated with the greatest wind speeds maybe were associated, you know, with kind of a north-northeasterly direction. Maybe that's what happened, whereas for most of the year, maybe the wind comes from a different direction, but just not as strongly. That's one possible explanation. Another explanation is that maybe weather patterns in general were just different. This represents data only within 2009, so we replicated in space rather than in time. Yes?
Based on your experiments, now should we call it as an autumn crop, pollinated crop, rather than self-pollinated?
So it's about tenfold more cross-pollinating than wheat. Okay, so wheat does cross-pollinate at very low frequencies. It's considered predominantly self-pollinating. So the assumption going into a wheat gene flow experiment is that it's a self-pollinating crop. I don't think that there's any such thing as something that doesn't ever cross-pollinate. Even in the case of cytosolic male sterilization, for example, every once in a while you can find some kind of plant that did in fact cross-pollinate. So you can never get down to zero. But the fact that this is less than 10%, even when the plants are in extremely close proximity, would suggest that this is primarily self-pollinating. Yes?
Is there any significant probability that the pollination could occur by a vector other than wind, which might explain some of your results?
It is possible. I mean, certainly different plants are pollinated by insects and other things like that. We didn't have the tools to assess that, but those tools are available for further research if someone wanted to do it. For example, you can use a pollen dye. That's one method that people have used. Yes?
I would suggest that you go back into your weather data during those high pollination times to take a look at where the wind was from. They usually have wind roses, and you should probably be able to find out what kind of direction you're in.
Mm-hmm. So you're suggesting that perhaps during that specific time, maybe the wind was a little bit variable as opposed...
But you can go through and you can figure it out.
Right.
If, you know, from your data that you should have had collected at the station.
Okay, yeah, we do have that data.
Okay, thanks.
Okay, there's no time, sorry.
Okay, we will thank Melinda, please.